It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
All right, I'm going to stand up for this. Good morning, welcome to Money Matters. We only got an hour today, so we need to get going. Right to the phones here, Linda from Athens. Linda, good morning. What's going on? How can I help you?
Okay, well, first, I'm glad to speak with you. I appreciate this very much. I am 53. I've got about, depending on the stock market, $800,000 in the market, and I've got about another $100 saved in other stuff. And then my house is paid for. I've got 25 acres on Lake Oconee. The acreage is not on the lake, but the subdivision has lakefront access. And I have a daughter who has got a very expensive hobby, and I am having to, and I'm sure people can feel my pain. I mean, this is cheaper than drug rehab, I know, but
I'm going to guess horses.
Yes.
Lord. Yes. Horses.
Okay. Horses, which is, anybody listening, I'm warning you. So I've had to take a little bit out to buy this beautiful animal, but I'm having to take out a little bit because each A show is just $600 just for the, for her to show in the show.
My goodness. Well, Linda, how much, can you please tell me how much the horse cost?
Well, he's probably worth about 70. I had to
70,
pay around,
wait, $70,000?
Yeah, you didn't hear this. Okay, so,
so the you have, is the house paid for?
It is.
And do you also mentioned that you've got acreage on the lake. Is that paid for, and do you live there?
I do, and it's all paid for. The lake, the subdivision has lake access, but the property is not on the lake. So it's not as valuable as if it were actually had lakefront access. You know, your house looked on the lake.
So but, it's around the lake. Is it?
Yes.
Is it? So your concern, And please articulate this beyond what I'm saying here. It sounds like you've got savings, and you've got some land, and it's paid for, which is a huge deal. It's a very important thing to have done by the time you stop working and you retire. But I guess your question is really, do you have enough to keep maintaining the expenses that you have today? Is that correct?
Well, yes. But see, I probably will pay for this with her until I know through high school, and I'll help her a little in college. But the deal is, you know, she's got to be able to get a career that's going to afford this hobby that she has.
And the hobby, the said hobby that we haven't mentioned now that we've come back. So she has a horse, and it's expensive to maintain a horse and buy a horse. And then what do you think the monthly carry is? And again, the horse was a $70,000 purchase, right?
Mm-hmm.
I know your folks listen and think, oh my God, I can't believe that. But that's part of the deal when it comes to horses. I'm from Pennsylvania, pretty rural Pennsylvania, about an hour and a half outside of Philly. And in the rolling hills of near Amish country. And my dad, who's a veterinarian, still has a couple of horses. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of an old school guy. I think he was a cowboy in another life. And he prides himself on not spending a whole lot of money. He's very anti-consumer. However, he's got a couple horses. So that's a super expensive hobby. So when he tells me, oh, I don't buy fancy cars and I don't go on fancy trips, he always forgets to mention that he's got a couple of horses. And even though they're not fancy, they ain't cheap. And so what's the carry per month on this? And I guess you're obviously paying for, how old's your daughter?
She's 15.
And what do you think it costs per year to maintain all this?
Oh, gosh.
Horse shows, board, everything. Food, veterinarian bills.
Well, I board it. I mean, he's on my property, but conservatively, well, it's $250 every time he gets his feet shot, so that's every 5 weeks. So I would say $700 a month.
Let's round, okay. Food, yeah. Everything like that, veterinarian yeah. bills.
I mean, well, let's just say to be, depending on, you know, I don't, let's just say it costs $15,000 a year for him.
That makes sense.
Depends on what comes up at the time. So,
well, it's like, so it's kind of like a small mortgage. And
yes.
And you said in the when we talked earlier, you've got about 800 saved. Is that right?
And well, about 900, and then my house and my property are paid for, and that doesn't include the house and the property.
Got it. Okay, so you've got obviously there's a lot of value in real estate if you got 20, you have 25 some acres near the lake.
I don't know. That's another thing is I know it, but if I look at what the tax assessor says, it's not much at all. Compared to what they say you can sell the place for. I mean, I have no clue anymore about what things are worth. And then the way the world's going and ISIS and this election. And I'm just beginning to wonder if I'll even get Social Security.
Well, let's talk. Okay, so a couple of things. One, you're gonna get Social Security. You're 53. I strongly believe, Linda, if you're 50 and up, you're not going to see your Social Security in any way touched or diminished or reduced. You're gonna get what's on that green statement. You get now, I believe, once every 5 years. You can log in at any point to SSA.gov,
right?
And you can quickly know what your benefit is. So let's say your benefit amount is 20 at 66. What's it say for you? 20. What does it look like?
Oh, it was the max, but see. I saved this money in another life, like another career. So the career I'm in now, in no way would have accumulated the money that I've got saved. And so
you're not making as much now as you did for a lot of years.
No.
Okay. Well, but that's fine because Social Security, they care a lot about what you do for that first 20, 25 years. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to get the max, you're probably looking at $2,800 a month.
Right.
You have the $2,800 a month, and that's at 66. And so you're still working right now. So you're not dipping into your savings yet, right?
Well, no, not. I dipped in when I had to buy him.
The horse.
Correct.
All right. Well, but here's the other thing. You don't have any debt. Are you married, right, by the way?
No, thankfully.
No, thankfully. So it's.
Obviously, I was, but no.
Okay. So this is the way I look at this. You've got to project. First of all, if you're only 53, are you going to continue to work for another 10 years?
Yes.
So when you finally get to the point where you're in retirement, even if you only make 5% a year, Linda, your money should double. And that's just mathematically in 14 years, even if you make 5% a year, your money will double in 14 years.
Yeah, but see, I'm having to take, this is, for him, my income will not support her hobby. So I have to take money out of the dividends that the mass accumulates.
Oh, so you're already spending some of this money today.
Yes.
Oh, you're spending your income on your portfolio today. So no wonder you're worried about all this because you're kind
right.
of, So I look at it this way. If you were to stop working and start living on your portfolio at the very young age of 53, then you do not want to take any more than 3.5% a year out. It's just too young to take what I believe 5% is a number that you can think about averaging over time, but it's too much to 5% is too high of a withdrawal rate if you're really young like you are, Linda. If you're 65, that's fine. But not at 53. So you've got to look at this and say, if you are really putting a huge, you are really damaging your future retirement income because of this, of paying for this today. If you're having to spend your, instead of letting that 900 grow to, let's say, $1.5 million or even more by the time you're 65, which it should do if you don't take the income, if you reinvest, then at that point, you're obviously totally fine. You've got $1.5 million. You can, at that point, you're taking 5%. That's $75,000 a year. Your Social Security is going to be another $30,000 a year. Linda, at that point, you're at $100,000 a year. Everything's fine. The problem is you're taking too much too soon. And you guys are going to have to figure out as a family for your daughter how to stop pulling out the dividends, at least for right now, because you're just too young to do it. And obviously you can do this for another year or two, and it's not going to materially kill your retirement, but you can't do this and pay for that, what you called a habit, this horse habit that's expensive, for the next 10 years. If you do that, but your daughter's 15, take it all the way to 25, she's not going to be able to afford this in the next 10 years. Horses are a giant expense. Millennials can't even get out of their parents' houses and afford rent, let alone pay for a riding hobby that's wonderful, but it's really expensive. So here's my prescription. Linda, in the next year to 18 months, you have to figure out as a parent and a future retiree how to stop paying for the horse habit. It's got to be a shared burden. Your daughter's going to have to figure out a way to work and also pay for it, because it's too important to your retirement to not have that as a burden. Not to mention, you got college costs coming up. Hey, you're listening to Money Matters. Stay tuned. More of this straight ahead right here at News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
Back to Wes Moss and the money and investing advice you need.
To the phones, we're going to Chuck, who joins us from Douglasville. Chuck, good morning. What's going on? Welcome to Money Matters.
Good morning, Wes. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, I got a real simple question about Social Security. I'm 64 years old. If I was to retire now, I'd make about $2,000 a month, and I'm allowed to make $17,000 a year on top of that, working part-time, whatever.
Right.
Okay, if I wait two more years, it only goes up about $240 a month. I'm thinking the simple math is, look at the taxes I'm going to be paying for those next 2 years. Is it really going to be worth an extra $240 a month to work two more years?
Well, think about what you leave on the table. So you've got, if those are the numbers, it's $2,000 a month, right? Times 24 months. So you're leaving $48,000 on the table, right?
Okay.
This is without taxes, but let's call it a gross $48,000 divided by, in the new world, if you waited till 64, you're getting an extra $240 a month. That's a 200 month break even divided by 12. It's about a 16 year break even. In fact, I bet you those numbers are even higher. Chuck, if you go back and look, I bet you your Social Security is even more than $240, because if that's the case, then it's a 16-year break-even. So you're better off for 16 years before, it takes you 16 years to break-even if you wait. And so that's probably the math that you're doing there, right? You're saying that I'm 64, it's going to take me all the way until age 81, basically, to break-even. Then, yeah, go ahead and just take it now. But I bet you that number is even a little bit higher than 240 extra, because the math works, it's about 7.5% gain per year. So it looks like it'd probably be a little more than 2240. I'd check those numbers again. But that's the decision we all have to make, right? I mean, the numbers are very clear. It's a 16 year in the numbers you gave me, break even. And we're going to be doing a lot more between 64, Chuck, and 80 than you're going to be doing between age 80 and 96. So if those are the numbers, that it leans towards taking a little bit early. I typically like to see people wait till their full age. I don't typically see people wait all the way to 70. I typically see people, I think 66 is a pretty good year, but if you're fully retired at 64 and you have a little part-time income, the numbers you're telling me, Chuck, then it probably makes sense to go ahead and take it. But again, I'd go back and check that green Social Security statement, check those numbers. All right, when we get back, we're going to go to the phones. Phone lines open, 404-872-0750. You're on Money Matters, News 95.5, AM 750, WSB. Let's start out with Alan, who joins us from Marietta. Alan, good morning. Hi. Welcome to Money Matters. What's up, man?
I'm just wondering how it's going to affect the capital gains tax on selling homes, stocks, and other things like that, because it's outrageous now. Is this going to lower it, or is it going to stay the same? Or
well, okay, so what Trump is proposing on capital gains, and remember, capital gains right now is a little bit confusing because if you're in the 10 or 15% bracket, your capital gain tax is actually zero. So I don't see that going any lower. I don't see that going away. But the maximum capital gain tax today, depending on your bracket, is 20%, Alan. But then there's an additional 3.8% surcharge on top of that if you're a high income earner. And that was a new tax back, effectively for new healthcare back in 2011 or 2013 when that started. So really, right now, your top dividend rate is 23.8%, and your capital gain tax rate is 23.8%. It's the same for dividends and for capital gains, Alan. Trump is at least trying to eliminate the extra 3.8%. So he's going to keep that at 20%. Another thing that he's going to do, and this, you're probably, Alan, do you run a hedge fund?
No, I basically invest in stock.
Okay. I'm kind of joking about that because there's not that many, there's not a lot of hedge fund guys out there. But remember, the fascinating thing about the hedge fund business is that hedge fund guys make this tremendous amount of money. It's called 2 and 20, 2% of the assets they manage plus 20% of the profits.
Wow.
But what is fascinating about that is that they might make $10, $20, $30 million in a year because of that structure. They're able to take that $30 million in income and only pay capital gain tax on it. It's called the carried interest rule. And okay. this kind of escapes a lot of Americans because it's hard to even fathom a hedge fund manager making $30, $40, $50 million in a year. This is per year we're talking. And then only having to pay 20% tax on that, or 23.8 to be exact. Now Trump is trying to eliminate that. So there's some confusion on this particular topic. What he's trying to eliminate is the carried interest rate that can be at capital gain, so that hedge fund guys that make $50 million a year only pay 23% in taxes. He's going to try to have that go back to just ordinary income tax like everybody else.
So it would be advisable to wait like 3 or 4 months after Trump gets into office before you make any radical financial decisions?
Well, I think that if you're gonna sell all of your stock,
that's what I was saying.
Yeah, I would just tell you that if you are, I think that first of all, it's going to take a long time, Alan. Thank you for your call. It's going to take a long time for anything to get passed. So it's probably, we don't know when the new lower capital gain rate is even going to take into effect. Even if they do it next year, what does that mean? If you sold a stock in January, but the law didn't pass until March or July, who knows exactly how they grandfather in or not? So if it were me, I would not let the tax tail wag the investment dog. That is a philosophy that I've stuck with for many, many years, is that I'm very cognizant of taxes. It's a big deal. But what's a bigger deal, Alan, is just being in the right investments for you, regardless of what the tax environment it is. And even in even if capital gains do change, we're only talking about a 4% lowering in that overall capital gain tax. So I wouldn't hold on to a bad stock, if that's what you're asking, that you don't like to begin with, just because capital gain rates are going to come down a little bit in the future. If you have something that you shouldn't own or you want to get rid of and you have a gain in it, I wouldn't wait for Congress. Quite frankly, I'd never wait on Congress for anything, Alan. But I think it's an important question here. And it's a scenario I think a lot of us are thinking, like, should we do something new? And by the way, Alan, thank you for your call, my friend. The number here in the studio on a Sunday morning to take your financial questions about how the world's going to impact you, what you should be doing with your investments, what you should be doing 401k or IRA or Is it an annuity question or a trust or a family issue or a real estate question? We're here to answer that. The number here in the studio, 404-872-0750. Again, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Alan brings up a really good point. Do I do anything? Do I wait for this change to come about and now redo? Do I wait until there's a tax change in order to figure out my investments? Do I change things today knowing what's going to happen with potentially whether to do tax bracket or a new law? How's that going to impact the market? And the answer is I don't see anything radically different except some extra economic stimulus from Trump. I mean, we have lower taxes could very well mean an economy that runs a little hotter. But what's interesting about the markets and the world that we live in is they react so quickly to the potential future outcome. I mean, we've already seen defense stocks go up 10%. We've already seen pharma go up between 5 and 10%. We've seen some of these banking companies like JP Morgan go up by 15% just in the last 2 weeks since Trump was elected. It hasn't even been 2 weeks. And you've seen this massive rotation into sectors that have been kind of suppressed, all thinking, well, it's going to be Democrats and it's going to be Hillary. And now, because so many bets were made thinking that it was going to be a Democrat in Washington for the next 4 years, that there were some massive changes that had to take place for a new potential outlook. And it happened really quickly. And I think it happened so quickly because the timeline historically looks almost identical to Brexit. No one thought Brexit would happen. It did happen. Markets sold off by 5% to 10% within 2 days, massive sell-off. But then within 8 trading days, the US market was right back to where it was before Brexit. Then the same thing effectively played out in the Trump timeline. Trump wasn't supposed to win. Market reflected that. All of a sudden, he won. Wham! You see this giant rotation into all the stocks that didn't expect him to win and could benefit in a greater way under a Trump presidency versus Hillary. That's why we saw pharmaceutical stocks do well, because we're not going to see a war on pharmaceuticals like we would have seen with Hillary. That's why we saw defense companies, Boeing, Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, Northrop Grumman, you name it, through the roof, because we know that Trump wants to increase the defense budget by 15%. The market just didn't think that would happen. Then we saw banks go through the roof because, well, wait a minute, maybe we soften Dodd-Frank, and maybe because you see a Trump stimulating the economy, interest rates go up. Well, we know that the Fed's going to probably raise rates in December, but what the market didn't count on is a hotter economy, a more stimulated economy, more economic growth could be an inflation. So we not only know that the Fed's raising rates, probably, we don't know, we think they're going to do this in December, but also if inflation continues to tick up, you're going to see higher interest rates. So that's also good for banks. And that's another reason we saw banks go through the roof over the last several weeks. Infrastructure is another issue. Infrastructure is another area of the marketplace that we've seen do very well. We know that Trump wants to rebuild bridges and airports and roads and tolls, you name it. Because of that, you've seen infrastructure companies like Caterpillar, that makes the big things that move dirt around and that would be involved in a lot of these projects. We've already seen those stocks move. So we've got to remember that a better economy could mean higher interest rates due to the fundamentally hotter economy. And that's part of the reason we've seen this rotation from we've seen interest rate sensitive products and vehicles take a step back over the last several weeks. Trent, good morning. Welcome to the show. How can we help?
Yes, I have a question on the biotechnology industry. I own a pretty good bit of biotech, and it's had a great run, but it's really been doing poorly. And I just kind of wondered from your standpoint, do you think it's a buy-in opportunity, or just really want to get your take on?
So this is a really interesting question, and it's been one of the best areas over the last several years. If you've owned biotech for the last decade, forget about it. You have just been, you've crushed almost every other sector out there. The problem with it is that it's a really rocky ride to get there. So if you look at back over the last 10 years, the last 2 years, you go back 6 or 7 months ago, midsummer, let's say, and you had about a, you're up 45% in IBB, which is a big biotech ETF that has a, it's a basket of biotech companies. Then you fast forward to today, 6 months later, that whole gain is gone. And that's the correction, I think, Trent, that you're talking about is really the last 6 months is that biotech got overheated, overexpensive, and it got caught up with a market in general that was selling off. And a lot of times you see the areas that have done the best then quickly reverse as hedge funds and mutual funds that maybe have profits in these areas, they hit the sell button really quickly and then boom, down 40%. So the way I look at this, and I do think that, again, if you've got a if you've got some intestinal fortitude and you understand, you've, this is probably a more of a buying opportunity in biotech than it is to get out. So I think that, again, if you have another several year period and it's not just the next 6 months or year, then I think biotech is on that vanguard of technology and healthcare together. It's hard to find another industry sector that can quickly make such economic impact and for from a company perspective can do really, really well. It's a little bit more difficult to pick your spots. With a slightly more conservative way to play this would be to just own some of these big healthcare companies. So if you think about Johnson & Johnson as an example we were talking about earlier today, on the bad side, you look at they have a gigantic hepatitis C drug that met some competition starting last year, and boom, that their sales are down something like 97% over the last quarter. But a J&J is a diversified healthcare and consumer staple company. And then in medical devices, they can go out and buy future products. And that's why I still like these big pharma, particularly a J&J-like company, is that if they not only are developing their own drugs and have their own research, they can quickly snap up a biotech type company and add it to their portfolio. So I guess if there's a two-part answer to your question, one, I look at biotech today as probably more of a buying opportunity. Now it's down 45% from last summer as a group. But I also, if you want to do this as a slightly steadier outlook and you don't want to necessarily own biotech individually, these big healthcare and pharmaceutical and consumer staple names are, I think, a really smart way to have access to that sector as well. Hey, you're listening to Money Matters. Stay tuned. More of this straight ahead right here at News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
Well, here's more great money and investment advice from certified financial planner Wes Moss.
Well, good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here on a Sunday morning. We're going to go to line one here. Greg joins us from Marietta. Greg, welcome to Money Matters. What's up? How can I help?
Good morning, Wes. I hold AT&T stock in my 457 retirement. I got into it mainly for the dividend, 5% dividend. And with the merger that's probably going to happen with Time Warner, I wanted to find out, what do you think is going to happen to the stock price of AT&T? I know Time Warner has gone up recently, but AT&T dropped a little bit. And also, I wanted to find out about what's going to happen with the dividend. Is the dividend going to be cut? Is the dividend going to increase? I'm not even sure what Time Warner's dividend is, if they pay a dividend.
Well, here's what's happening. I mean, if you look at a couple of stock charts, you'll see that, obviously, AT&T dropped a bunch on the news. It dropped 3% because AT&T is a highly levered company, meaning they have a lot of debt.
Right.
And when you do a merger like this, or an acquisition, really, this is an $85 billion acquisition, which is more than what the market cap even shows for Time Warner right now. So there's a premium there being paid. That's why the stock was up 8% in a day, Time Warner. But if you look back and you see what Comcast has done over the last several years, you get a sense of why AT&T would want to buy a content company. So Comcast, NBC Universal, that stock is up 100-some percent, 150% over the last 5 years. AT&T stock is basically flat. You pull up a five-year chart, AT&T is up 26%. Comcast is up 168%.
Right.
And so getting into that business of content has much higher there should be more profitability there, so they should be able to pay for the acquisition and continue to maintain the dividend. I think that they'll probably be able to maintain that. It's probably not a bad thing long-term for AT&T stock. Enjoy the rest of this beautiful fall day. And we'll be back next Sunday as well, right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. God bless.